It's time for Forward Nation Radio. Now here he is, the host of Forward Nation Radio, David Leventhal.
Welcome to Forward Nation Radio with me, David Leventhal. I guess it has to be me because I'm the one speaking. Thank you for joining us this week. We're glad you can join us, and happy Passover to all. First, we'd like to start off with the news this week. Then we'll spend a little bit of time with listener questions. Talk a little bit about privatization. Would you prefer to be dealing with government entities or private entities? And time permitting, we'll talk a little bit about campaign finance reform and how that affects you. We hope to get to that this week. First, the news. Now, I can't do this. I'm tired of this. I'm sorry. It's too depressing. I can't deal with this. I can't deal with the news. Every week, it just gets worse and worse. The other side gets to do fake news. They get to make shit up that makes them feel a whole lot better about things. Can't we do that? I'm getting a very reluctant nod from my producer. So, here are the fake news stories of the week. The news we would like to have seen during the week. First of all, the Republican Party has come out and apologized to Susan Rice. Turns out, they said, well, yeah, we keep making stuff up about you. Obviously, we have to make up all kinds of stuff to change the subject from our possible conspiracy with Russia. So we just make stuff up all the time. And we're sorry. But as a black woman, you are just way too inviting a target for us to appeal to our racist, misogynist base. We're sorry. We take it all back. The House Intelligence Committee this week announced that it would be asking an independent prosecutor to take over the investigation of Donald Trump and the administration's ties to Russia. Committee Chairman Devin Nunes has come out and admitted that he's Trump's bitch, apologized for it, said, I feel really bad about it, but clearly a bitch like me should not be running this committee and running the investigation of my sugar daddy. Therefore, we're going to ask someone actually responsible and honest with a little bit of integrity to be doing it. Okay, happy now? Also this week, the Republican Party acknowledges climate change and other science. This is part of a mea culpa where the Republican Party has said, okay, we've been making shit up for a long time because you can't really blame us. Our supporters are really stupid. And we make stuff up, and they just keep buying it. So why not keep making stuff up? So we've been doing that. For years, we really haven't given a crap about America or the people in it. We really just care about our own power and our own wealth. That's what this party is all about. The Republican leadership then committed ritual suicide, showing how bad they feel about their lack of responsibility to the American public, their betrayal. All except for Paul Ryan, that is, who didn't have the balls to do it, so he asked Donald Trump to do it for him. Now, he probably asked Jared Kushner to do it for him. Fox News just announced that they were firing Bill O'Reilly after advertisers were leaving the show in droves. Fox News came out and said, turns out we don't want to be the sexual predator channel. Yes, we were considering changing some of our brochures to SPC. We were thinking about SPN. But then we decided that sounded a little bit too much like ESPN, and we didn't want to bring ESPN down with us because where else would we get our high school softball? So thinking of calling ourselves the Sexual Predator Channel. Nevertheless, with all our advertisers leaving, we have no choice but to fire Bill O'Reilly. All the people who came up and worked underneath Roger Ailes, serial sexual predator, have also been fired. In fact, so many advertisers have been leaving Fox News, not wanting to be associated with blatant lies at the expense of the American public, that Fox News has announced that it will be closing its doors soon enough. Don't worry, Fox News reporters and journalists presumably will find a home at Breitbart. Jared Kushner just announced that he will be leaving the administration to spend more time with Donald Trump's family. Wait, that doesn't work. That works for football players and stuff. It doesn't really work for Jared Kushner because there's no better way to spend time with Trump's family than by spending time in the White House. So maybe he wants to go play in his sandbox. Turns out Jared Kushner came out and said, look, come on, people, seriously. I'm a 36-year-old jackass. I'm a nothing. I'm a scion of a rich real estate family. I've never done anything, accomplished anything in my entire life. Seriously, what kind of moron would have me sitting down with the leader of China? So he left the White House and went back to play in his sandbox. Okay, as I indicated, I made that up. It was fun there for a few minutes for me. It was nice believing it. You know, like you have that moment, maybe, just for a moment when you wake up in the morning, you had a nice dream. Donald Trump wasn't the president. Someone competent was the president. Someone who gave a crap about the people of this country and our future was the president. Just for a moment, it felt good to be living in an alternative universe. I guess I understand why Kellyanne Conway is where she is, does what she does. It's nice to make stuff up and have people believe it, or better yet, to believe it yourself. Obviously, the real news during the week was O'Reilly and Fox basically said, oh, fuck off. Leave us alone. We're sexual predators. What of it? Our viewers don't particularly like women anyway. So get off our case, mainstream media. Advertisers would never leave such gullible morons. They would never leave Fox News in droves. Because these are the kind of people who buy products based on a stupid TV commercial. Okay, to our listener questions. Starting off with a question from Sandra from New York. Thank you, Sandra. What, if anything, can be done to protect the public from fake news? Somebody might have told me that that was the first listener question before I just did that opening bit. But seriously, what can be done to protect the public from fake news? I actually talk about this in one of my classes a whole lot. The first thing, of course, that can be done is the responsibility of the listener. And that means you, Sandra, and everybody else listening, and many of your friends and family members who aren't listening. Only you can protect yourself from fake news at this point in time. If you are informed, if you are thoughtful, you can recognize frequently fake news from real news. You can, for instance, turn off Fox News. You can turn off right-wing radio. You can learn who's credible and who's not credible. And you could pay attention to people who are credible and you could ignore people who are not. If a media channel has a history of lying to people, you shouldn't be listening to it. You need to get informed. Sandra, you're obviously listening to our show, so you're making an effort to get informed. I hope you're reading newspapers, getting information even from places beyond Forward Nation Radio. But if you are uninformed, if you are ignorant, if you know nothing, then blatant lies and stupidity sound reasonable to you. In other words, you're a Fox News viewer. You don't have any information with which to analyze new information that comes in. You deny yourself the ability to critically think. You deny yourself the ability to recognize when people are lying to you. But clearly that's not going to be good enough. Most Americans don't have the time or the inclination to become so informed that they can recognize really good fake news when they hear it. People who make fake news are good enough at what they do to know how to deceive people. Stupid people, people who willingly turn on Fox News and turn on Breitbart and get their news from Fox and Friends, you know, like the president. These people are easily parted from their money and their reason, but you've got to get more people than that. In order to get enough votes to win a presidential election, you're going to have to get some people who don't quite fall on the completely brain-dead part of that scale. So you've got to be more sophisticated. So what do we do about fake news? That's a really important question with a really difficult answer. I said in a previous show that I'm a longtime member and supporter of the ACLU. I believe in the Bill of Rights. I believe in the First Amendment. I believe in freedom of speech. And yet, I have come to the realization that the way we define freedom of speech in America is counterproductive. I spent a lot of time on this a couple of shows ago, but to answer your question, I will reiterate some of what I said. Freedom of speech, the idea of freedom of speech in America, is to create a marketplace of ideas, to put information that makes sense, that is valuable, that consists of cogent arguments, to put it out there with the stuff that doesn't fit in that category so that the American public can listen to both and tell the difference. We don't worry so much about Nazi propaganda because when we hear the alternative, we will disregard the noxious ideas and accept the ones that make more sense and that are based on truth and decency and civility. Well, the problem is that we don't have a marketplace of ideas for the most part, and we have so much fake news, so much propaganda, that I strongly believe that our basic free speech ideals no longer work. And we're going to need to seriously reconsider how we treat free speech. Clearly, there need to be penalties for people who say things that are not true and that are knowingly not true. People who make a mistake and say things that aren't true need to fully retract what they say in the same venue in which they said it in the first place. In Germany, if you deny the Holocaust, you will go to prison. In America, if you deny the Holocaust, you will talk about freedom of speech, and you will have adherents who don't listen enough to reasonable points of view, who just turn on Fox News, just turn on Breitbart, and therefore the most noxious ideas on the planet become reasonable to them because they are not counteracted by better ideas. I believe that there are going to have to be more penalties for people who deceive the public. I believe broadcast licenses need to be taken away, and I understand I'm not a media guru. I'm not sure how you do that. People smarter than me and more informed than me are going to have to figure that out. But what we have now is clearly not working and is clearly problematic for society. There needs to be more accountability for misleading the American public. Thanks for the question, Sandra, and I hope it spurs some thought with all of you. Carlos from Buffalo, New York, thanks for your question. Why can't we as a nation cope with a Republican president? That's an interesting question. I'm starting off first. I want to address the idea, it seems underlying that question, is that Democratic voters and liberals have a hard time accepting Republican presidents. And if that's the predicate for the question, I have to strongly disagree with that. In fact, in 2000, we got a president who was, in all accounts, illegitimate. We've had two Republican presidents, I'm betting in your lifetime, Carlos, who lost the popular vote. Now, yes, they won the Electoral College, but it was clear in 2000 that the Republican Party had made plans for what they would do if, as was the more likely expected outcome, if Al Gore won the Electoral College and George Bush had won the popular vote. And the bottom line was the Republicans were going to burn the place down. They were going to try to overcome the Electoral College and basically get the presidency by screaming about how it was being stolen because they had won the popular vote. Well, now this is twice that it's happened that the Republican has lost the popular vote and become the president. Democrats haven't burned the place down. We have a president who may yet be shown to be in the pocket of a foreign rival. Yet Democrats and liberals aren't burning the place down as Republicans would be. Whatever else one thinks of what's happening, if the roles were reversed right now, and everything that's happened had been the Clinton presidency rather than the Trump presidency, if Hillary Clinton were relying on Chelsea Clinton to run the country, and Chelsea Clinton's husband to be the effective president, if she was loaded with conflicts of interest and was promoting her business interests at the expense of the interests of this country, if Hillary Clinton were jetting off to her private resort every weekend, and Bill and Chelsea were living somewhere else and getting Secret Service protection, the Republican base would be up in arms. If Hillary Clinton were alleged to have conspired with Russia to steal a presidential election, do you really think that the Republican base would be as sanguine about it as the Democratic base has been? As reasonable, saying, let's get to the bottom of this and then decide? As I indicated before, they wouldn't be calling for Hillary Clinton's impeachment. They'd be calling for her head on a stick. So beyond that, why are Democrats perhaps having a problem with a Republican president? Well, as I indicated, we have a problem with the fact that the guy who keeps losing keeps becoming the president. We have a problem with the fact that we have an arcane and ridiculous, outdated system that allows, turns out, Republicans to keep becoming president when they've lost the vote, when more people have voted for their opponent than voting for them. Shouldn't we be angry about that? Shouldn't we have a problem with that? Carlos, do you believe in democracy? Because if you do, you should be having a problem with the fact that Donald Trump is the president of the United States. Hillary Clinton got a lot more votes. More than that, we believe in this country. We want what's best for the people in it. We have information. We are thoughtful. We are empathetic. We care about the lives that are going to be ruined by another incompetent presidency. Already, it seems pretty apparent that two of the three worst presidencies in the history of the United States will have come from the last few years, the last two Republican presidencies, from people who lost the election. It's hurting people. We have a problem with that. More than that, in my case, well, not more than that, but in addition to that, in my case, I want to believe that there's some justice, there's some fairness. When people say America's the greatest country on earth, I want to believe we have some reason to actually say that. I don't want America to be the laughingstock that it's becoming. I don't want America to be losing its first world democratic allies and instead sidling up to third world dictators. I don't want America to be seen as the guys in the black hat. I don't want evil to triumph over good. I don't want white supremacists to be celebrating. I don't want Nazis to be celebrating. I don't want misogynists to be celebrating. I don't want Kellyanne Conway and Steve Bannon to be celebrating. I want them to be miserable, like I am. I guess that's our problem with the Republican president, certainly the current one. Ronald Reagan famously said that the nine words in the English language that drive fear into people's hearts I'm from the government, and I'm here to help. And when I say Ronald Reagan, of course, I mean Ronald Reagan. You know, the guy sitting next to Jesus. That's a cute line. You got to hand it to Ronald Reagan. He could deliver a line with the best of them. True, he frequently couldn't tell what was a line from a movie and was actual reality when he was the president, but he was Ronald Reagan. I'm from the government, and I'm here to help. Strikes fear into people's hearts. Tell that to people on Long Island after Hurricane Superstorm Sandy. Tell that to people for whom government programs are educating their children, helping their children with disabilities, helping to provide health care to people who otherwise couldn't afford it, educating our citizens. But the basic sentiment beyond that, beyond its obvious offensiveness for people who are in trouble and for whom government provides much needed services, is the idea that the free market does everything better than government does. The free market is more efficient than government is. Is that true? We now have an education secretary who's not a big fan of public education, prefers private education. Private schools do it better. Let's ignore the fact that some of our money is going to go to private religious schools, and many of us would think that we should not be paying to educate children in Christianity, or Judaism, or Islam, or any other religion. We should be paying for kids to go to school and learn science. And then maybe they won't grow up to be Republicans. I could see the problem there. But the fact is, study after study shows that private schools do not do better than public schools in educating. They are frequently more expensive than public schools. Their outcomes are, on balance, no better than public schools and probably slightly worse. Some do a little bit better. Some more do worse. For-profit colleges compared to public colleges. I'm biased. I teach at a public college. But have you been following the news for the last few years? For-profit colleges, including Trump University, have been embroiled in one scandal after another. Turns out that public colleges deliver a quality education at a better cost than most private colleges. For-profit colleges, for instance, have a long history of stealing money from veterans. Limitations on their ability to do that, by the way, are being taken away. The Obama administration instituted rules limiting federal financed student loans and federal aid to for-profit schools that can't show that they actually graduate their students. These schools, turns out, overwhelmingly prey upon military veterans. Isn't that nice? The Trump administration, of course, has taken away those rules. We've turned to private prisons as a panacea. They will replace public prisons, save us money. Turns out that private prisons do not save us money. They actually end up costing us a lot of money. Not necessarily out of pocket, but also because we have to deal with the problems that private prisons create. Turns out that private prisons make their money by paying their guards less, by employing fewer guards, by not providing things like medical care or recreation time or education for their prisoners. Lock someone in a box all day and throw in food for a little while, you should be able to lower costs tremendously. So why haven't they been able to? Well, like in most instances, when you turn things from government to private enterprise, you throw in the looting motive. People running private prison corporations make a lot of money. Stockholders of private prison companies need to show a good return on their investment. The head of the state or federal corrections department probably doesn't make a whole lot of money. The head of the formerly known Correction Corporation of America, you can bet, makes a whole hell of a lot. That brings us to healthcare. Can't private industry do it better than the public government option? Well, it turns out, in everywhere that we can measure and compare, that's not true. The most efficient and effective healthcare system in America is, hold your breath, Medicare. On average, Medicare administrative costs range between 2 and 4%, I believe, over the years. Whereas private health insurers' administrative costs range up to 20%. That's what they spend on administration. Well, those numbers might be a few years old. And that was when they were spending a lot of that money on administration, making sure that they don't actually insure anybody who might be sick. And to throw off the rolls anybody who gets sick. A few years ago, a guy by the name of William C. McGuire stepped down as the head of one of the largest health insurance companies in America. He was forced out, basically at the point of a gun, because of all the criminal charges that had been filed against the insurer over the years while he was running the company. Things like improperly denying health care, throwing people off the rolls when they'd paid for insurance for a long time but got sick. So he was forced out. When he left, his retirement package was only $1.1 billion, with a B. That's money that's not being spent on healthcare, not being spent treating people. It's being looted from the healthcare system. By the way, that story has a happy ending. To prove that crime doesn't pay, there was a big uproar about the fact that this guy, who was presiding over a company engaged in a pattern of criminal activity, got $1.1 billion. And they had to reduce his payout to a paltry 300 and something million. Yep, crime doesn't pay. You compare the American healthcare system of private insurance companies to the rest of the industrialized world that uses some form of a public insurance system, and it turns out that they are way more efficient than we are. We spend way more than the rest of the world on insurance, both as a matter of straight how much we're spending and as a percentage of our economy. We spend dramatically more than everybody else in the world. And yet, we are the only first world industrialized nation that does not even insure all of its citizens. Why does this matter to you? Well, the one thing that Donald Trump promised during the campaign that might be positive was to spend money on infrastructure, which America sorely needs. And yet, already the indications are that whatever infrastructure plan might emerge from this presidency and this Congress will basically primarily consist of the privatization of public resources. Yes, it worked well in our parent company, Russia. It might as well work here. We'll sell off our national parks. We'll sell off our roads. The right to collect tolls on bridges and roads will be sold undoubtedly on the cheap to private companies. This will make us less efficient. This will make us more stratified. Resist the calls for privatization. As a general proposition, government probably does it better. One other place you hear this, of course, is the U.S. Post Office. Let's replace the post office with private companies because they do it more efficiently. And to some extent, there's truth to that. They pay their workers less. Seems to me it's not such a bad thing if government pays its workers a living wage, treats its workers a little bit better. Is that inefficient sometimes? Maybe. But I'm okay with that kind of inefficiency. The other inefficiency of the post office is the post office delivers mail to people who are clearly money losers, to rural America. That's right, many of the people who voted for Donald Trump and the Republican Party. privatize the postal system, the first thing that you will see is that these people lose their mail delivery. I'd like to spend a couple minutes getting back into the issue of campaign funding, because I've been promising you for a couple of weeks that I would be doing this. Just want to touch upon a little bit how campaign spending affects you and your life every day. I'd like to start and almost end with a couple of quotes, starting with Ralph Nader, the consumer advocate and the person who may have saved more American lives than anybody else alive today. Over the past 20 years, big business has increasingly dominated our political economy. This control by the corporate government over our political government is creating a widening democracy gap. Active citizens are left shouting their concerns over a deep chasm between their government and themselves. The unconstrained behavior of big business is subordinating our democracy to the control of a corporate plutocracy that knows few self-imposed limits to the spread of its power. Moving on all fronts to advance narrow profit motives at the expense of civic values, large corporate lobbies and their law firms have produced a commanding, multifaceted, and powerful juggernaut. They flood public elections with cash, and they use their media conglomerates to exclude, divert, or propagandize. They brandish their willingness to close factories here and open them abroad if workers do not bend to their demands. By their control in Congress, they keep the federal cops off the corporate crime, fraud, and abuse beats. Bernie Sanders, before he was running for president, famously said at the climate rally in New York City, "Nothing passes Congress without the approval of oil companies, corporate America, and Wall Street." Think about that. Nothing passes Congress without the approval of oil companies, corporate America, and Wall Street. What do oil companies, corporate America, and Wall Street want? They want more for themselves. And if they can do that by poisoning your water, your air, harming your family, that's fine. Selling mortgage-backed securities to adults, cigarettes to children, that's fine. We won't have laws against that. What laws we do have will be written by corporate America, frequently literally, and passed by a compliant Congress that will put the interests of corporate America ahead of individuals. You think about great science fiction movies of the past. Movies like Blade Runner or The Terminator, where the robots we create, the artificial entities that we create, take over the world for themselves, and in one form or another enslave us. It may not be robots, at least not yet, that's doing that, that provides that threat. It's corporations. We've created these entities as a means to create profit without individual responsibility. But they've now, in many respects, grown to control us. We'll build on this a little bit more in our next episode, but I will leave you now with another quote from another one of my heroes, the late, great George Carlin. Some of you have seen this on the internet. It's pretty popular there. "The real owners are the big, wealthy business interests that control things and make all the important decisions. Forget the politicians. They're an irrelevancy. The politicians are put there to give you the idea that you have freedom of choice. You don't. You have no choice. You have owners. They own you. They own everything. They own all the important land. They own and control the corporations. They've long since bought and paid for the Senate, the Congress, the state houses, the city halls. They've got the judges in their back pockets. And they own all the big media companies so that they control just about all of the news and information you hear. They've got you by the balls. They spend billions of dollars every year lobbying to get what they want. Well, we know what they want. They want more for themselves and less for everybody else." I'll leave you till next week with the thought of how much less you are going to be getting for a while. Anyway, enjoying Forward Nation? Please go to forwardnationradio.com. We have a lot more up there for you than just the podcasts themselves. Our team is putting together some great cartoons, charts that will help inform and support what we're doing here in the show. Go to Forward Nation Radio and get the full experience. You'll see the video from this in every episode there and on our YouTube channel as well. Don't miss the next Forward Nation Radio podcast on Podbean if you like to listen to it by radio. If you love what you heard, like us on Facebook. Tell your friends. Spread the word. Forward Nation Radio. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for your questions. Thank you for spreading the word. Have a nice holiday.
You've been listening to Forward Nation Radio with David Leventhal.